Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 12:27 PM. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is December 30th. In a day where we had not a great deal of liquidity, there's still a lot of evidence that the dollar could indeed be peaking. I thought we'd kick off and look at the Asia dollar index. It's been consolidating here, mostly above the trend mean since October, and there is the potential that it is going to, I think we can clearly see is that there is scope for a much bigger period of outperformance. When we then think about what the outlook is over the last decade, then we get, I think, a much better picture, because the index has been going down now for most of the last 9 years, and it went to a new low at about the middle of this year, but it has since rebounded. The bigger question that I think most people are going to be asking is whether this is just a flash in the pan or whether we're seeing a meaningful low for Asian currencies. Then when we think about the Latin America dollar index, that is heavily weighted by both the Mexican peso and to the Brazilian real, and it hasn't quite yet been able to break back above its trend mean. It has had a much more significant decline over the last 9 years, but there is the potential that we're seeing a meaningful move. When we then think about a broader emerging markets currency index, well, the MSCI index is a reasonable barometer. It hasn't quite been able to break out to new all-time highs, but when we look at the range that's persisted for just about all of 2019, we're pushing on to new closing highs for the index. There is the potential that we're at least going to go back up and test the peaks from 2011 and 2018. Of course, this is a very broad index. It includes just about all markets that aren't within the G7. So there is the potential that this break in the trend we've seen in the dollar index is going to go further. The index, however, was off its lows in here today, and there is a very short-term oversold condition. I think when we look at the rounding characteristic that's been evident on the index over the course of the last 6 months, there is a reasonably good argument that we're seeing a meaningful turn in the dollar. There was also some speculation in here today about the nature of the Federal Reserve's liquidity provision, that it's been pouring money into the repo market, $400 billion in just the last 4 months. And that's an extraordinary quantity of liquidity that's been hitting the markets. The last three repo auctions were undersubscribed. Now, there are two ways of potentially interpreting this kind of data. The first would be to say, well, there's ample liquidity, and therefore the market doesn't require the quantity of liquidity the Fed is injecting. Of course, if one were to draw that conclusion, you'd have to answer the question, why would the Fed be providing that quantity of liquidity in the first place if there was no need for it? There is another way of then interpreting the same data and to think, well, perhaps the returns on offer aren't attractive enough to encourage demand for the liquidity. And that is potentially more market-based. Generally speaking, if there was a massive source of liquidity, one would anticipate that it would create demand for it. Unless, of course, there is either a constriction that is not allowing money to flow in, and then we have to think about what those constrictions may be. It could be that the return isn't high enough, or that regulation is stopping that money from flowing in, or the demand for those loans to flow out. Well, the reality is that there is a continued effort to supply liquidity to the repo market. That represents a significant supply of additional new dollars, and it represents a headwind for the dollar. I think if we're looking for a clear fundamental reason for why the dollar should be weakening from here, that has to be one of them. Then we should be looking at what some of the main commodity currencies are doing, because the Australian dollar has now broken a 2-year downtrend. This is a clear break of the downward bias. The New Zealand dollar has been more volatile in terms of its downtrend, but it has also broken clearly back above the trend mean. Then when we look at, for example, the Norwegian crown, it had been trending downwards for most of the last couple of years, and it is now trading stronger than the trend mean. These are, of course, all commodity-related currencies. When we then think about the Mexican peso, it has also strengthened through the trend mean. It was in a little bit weaker territory in here today, but certainly not in a very dynamic manner. All of this is there is, of course, the argument for why the dollar should be weaker, but then, of course, there's an additional question about the easing of the trade war, and which increasingly looks like at least a hiatus. The Trump administration has got a clear incentive to remove some of the barriers to economic growth ahead of the election in November of next year. The A-share index in China today was in positive territory. We had the removal of one of the dual bands of interest rates in the economy. There are still two different. There is a significant difference between the lending rate and the deposit rate on retail deposits, and that is one of the reasons why there is the risk of capital flight. What they have tried to do today is to remove the risk of capital flight from the corporate sector by ensuring that SOEs and banks are now borrowing at or have ha always had one rate, and that corporations will be able to borrow at the same rate. That has been a tailwind for the corporate sector. It was represented a 1% move in the stock market today. It's coming back up to test this 3,200 point level on the A-share index. When we then think about the futures traded CSI 300, it's broken successfully above the 4,000 level. This has been a rather lengthy consolidation all of this year, in fact, but it is looking now increasingly likely that it will be able to push on the upside. Well, that is beneficial to all commodity producers. If China is starting to pull on some of the levers it has available to it to encourage global gro or encourage domestic growth, that should help to boost global growth, particularly for the commodity producers. I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing some of those currencies doing better. Then, when we think about the outlook for the renminbi, well, it has been steadying. It is still around this 7 level. I don't think there's a great deal of appetite in Beijing for a stronger currency, but it isn't going down in any kind of dynamic manner at present, and that is positive. When we think about what's going on in Hong Kong, well, the majority of the constituents of the Hang Seng now are mainland companies, and we've had a progression of higher reaction lows since the middle of August, and it pushed on to a new recovery high over the course of the last 4 or 5 sessions. There is a short-term overbought condition, but it is now trading back above the trend mean. When we think about the China Enterprises Index, which is all mainland companies, then it has pushed above the 11,000 level. It has certainly demonstrated near-term support around the psychological 10,000 level. It's been ranging mostly below 11,000 for a year and a half now. So there is the potential that we're going to see some additional upside here if the outlook for growth in China does continue to improve. And of course, that is tied to the trade war continuing to look, or at least a resolution to the trade war looking more benevolent. The Indian stock market is also continuing to consolidate here in the region of its peak. This continues to look like a breakout to new all-time highs. There's been a long range going on now for a year and a half, but there's still a clear upward bias. The banking sector in India has been a reliable lead indicator for the wider market, both on the upside and the downside, and it is still pushing on to new high ground, although it was a little easier in here today. When we then think about some of the other currencies in the region, the Thai baht was at a new high in here today and continues to extend its uptrend. That has represented something of a headwind for the domestic market in nominal terms, but of course in currency adjusted terms, for example, if we were to put this into US dollars, then it looks more like an upward bias overall. The Korean won had been among the worst performing currencies in the region, but it is also strengthening up in here. The Singapore dollar has been largely range-bound for most of the last year, but it is now coming to the upper side of its range. It's shown inversely here against the US dollar. Well, what we're increasingly seeing is that it isn't simply that the euro is looking firmer against the US dollar, but rather that this is much more of a broad-based change in trend for the dollar. And we're seeing just about every currency doing better against it. Well, that's rather interesting from the perspective of value investors. Europe is trading at a significant valuation discount compared to the USA. That is particularly true of the UK because of the shock value of the Brexit referendum in 2016, which created a significant valuation discount, and there is the potential that domestic UK plays are going to continue to outperform going into 2020, even beside the fact that we do have a short-term overbought condition. I think this is equally true of just about all markets, that we have had some weakness coming through in here today for the simple reason that we are approaching the very end of the year. There is the incentive to take some profits. We certainly haven't had very big downward dynamics, but we can't rule that potential out, particularly in the first week of January, for the simple reason that we have short-term overbought conditions. And the ticking over into a new year and a new decade is probably something that is going to be catalytic in terms of whether people are going to go for a risk-on or a risk-off environment just in the first couple of weeks of the year. When we look at what's going on in terms of European stock markets, well, the Euro Stoxx index has pushed on to new high ground. I think there is potential we're going to get some consolidation, but this is a new five-year high, and we are not so far away from the all-time peaks going back, or at least that were tested in 2007 and posted in 2000. Then when we think about the broad European index, there is a clear potential that this breakout to new all-time highs is going to be sustained into 2020. When we think about what is it that generally tended to do best in the run-up from the lows for gold and the initial breakout in 2002, well, it was emerging markets and gold tend to do well together because they generally tend to reflect either ambivalence towards the potential for major governments to debase their currencies. And that is what we're seeing increasingly with the USA, where they're running trillion-dollar deficits, printing $400 billion in the space of just 4 months, and with a clear intention to run progressively larger deficits. That is clearly beneficial to gold. It's also beneficial to emerging markets and commodity producers, and there is the scope here that they're going to rally together. Gold is back above the $1,500 area. It is in the process of breaking the downward bias evidence since the peak in September. There is clear potential here that the gold stocks index is going to be one of the better performers in 2020. It has clearly bounced from the region of the trend mean. This hasn't looked like anything other than a period of consolidation for most of the last 4 months, and it was due a consolidation following the very impressive advance that we had in the early part of this year. If the gold stocks index can sustain a move above 30, it will be completing a 7-year base formation. And generally, when we get these lengthy base formations completed, well, they lead to medium-term bull markets. This is one of the more encouraging base formations that we have out there right now. And finding base formations with these orderly consolidations in the region of the peak are one of the clearest, are I think probably the easiest answers to what is likely to do best. They have the base effect because it's easier to go from 30 to 40 and a 33% gain than it is for the S&P 500 to go up another third from where it is trading right now. To go from 3,000 to 4,000 is a big ask when the market has been already rallying for 10 years. That doesn't necessarily mean that it can't do that. When we look at the ranges that have persisted in the course of this decade-long advance, these incredibly persistent advances that we had in 2013 through to the end of 2014, and from 2016 through to the end of 2017, then there is the potential that we're going to get another one of those impressive advances on this occasion. What we can also think about is that the pace of this breakout has been rather fast compared to what we've seen previously. There is the potential that we're going to see an acceleration on the upside. I think in the short term, there is the scope that we could get some consolidation. The big point here is that I think this is the point in the cycle where we're likely to get demand for catch-up plays, and the valuation that we're seeing on Wall Street now is higher than just about everywhere else. With the dollar starting to moderate in terms of its outperformance, we're also starting to see some of the demand for U.S. Treasuries ease. The 10-year yield is right in the region of the trend mean. The yield did not quite hold all of the move on the upside in here today. It would have to at least break the sequence of higher reaction lows to question the supply-dominated environment. If the dollar does in fact clearly break its trend against the euro in here over the course of the next month, I think there's clear scope that yields on the 10-year in treasuries is going to sustain a move above the 2% level. And when we think about where are we, well, we've had very clear upward dynamics. In fact, we haven't had dynamics this big from the 1.5% level at any point over the last decade, but we've had meaningful bounces in terms of the yield from this level before. I think it is more likely than not that we're going to see additional upside here. If commodities continue to improve, then that is likely to stoke inflationary pressures. I don't think we have to go very far to think about why we might get an inflationary scare when we consider the uptick in commodity prices. And the recent strength in oil prices is also likely to be beneficial. I personally don't think that it is going to be likely we're going to see oil prices above $80 just because there is so much additional supply becomes economic when it gets to those levels. But that doesn't mean we can't have some inflationary pressures coming through, particularly from food, but also because governments are printing money like it's going out of fashion. And that supply argument is one of the central points where inflation could start to pick up. Well, if we're thinking about what we might anticipate then for next year, then I think an easier dollar, the potential for an inflationary scare, the outperformance of commodities, and a return to of interest by investors for both European and emerging market equities would seem to be the clearest potential outcomes. I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.